So, and by the way, this video is not going to be on YouTube because they would block it because they think that this is misinformation. Anyway, so we've got the we've explained everything. That's how you do it. So what we did is we said, okay, you know, we could be wrong. Maybe it wasn't factor 40. Maybe deaths are like people are super diligent on deaths and are always reporting it. Maybe it's 30. You know, I don't know. So we checked our work four different ways. And we actually had different researchers do it each time to be able to check this. And they didn't use VAERS at all, right? They used different methods to determine the number of excess deaths. And like one of the methods covered 35% of the world population and didn't even include, there was no VAERS data at all. And we basically found the same answer. And anybody who said that we got it wrong, they never came up with their analysis and they never really read our analysis. So if you say we're wrong, you know, we've shown you ours. Let's see yours. And then we did another way to do this, which is we did polling. Now, this was kind of a test poll. We wanted to find out whether the polling would work, and we're getting better numbers, and we'll come back with the with better numbers here because it's only 311 in each category. So these numbers could be off by quite a bit. But it turns out when you do these polls, the breakdowns don't really change that much. Once you have a few hundred people, you add people, you know, it shifts a little bit. So we had one of our statisticians, Matthew Crawford, do a calculation based on this, and he came up with 174,000 deaths. So this is using a complete, this doesn't use VAERS at all. This is just polling people. Hey, how many people do you know died from the vaccine? And the problem is when you ask people how many people you know died from the vaccine, you're going to get answers that, you know, they're not going to know. Hey, died from a heart attack. You know, a week after he got the vaccine. Did he die from the vaccine? Yeah, you don't know, right? So we asked people this specific question. So that's probably underreported. So this is why I think this 174,000 is actually quite a bit lower than the actual true number of deaths here. And of course, the number of disabled, we can then do the same thing. So we do a VAERS query, how many people found where the vaccine is bought and disabled? About the same number, more people, you know. And so if we use the sort of the same math, we get a lot bigger than 300,000 because the underreports on 300,000, it might be reported at 100 to 1, it might be at 200 to 1, like it's very underreported. And so that's why this 300,000 is a lower bound you based on the VAERS method. So I'm going to talk a little bit about these mRNA vaccines because you really need to understand how they work in order to really understand why we're seeing these adverse events and we're seeing so many of them in VAERS. So the way it works, and I won't go through how they created the vaccine, but essentially what happens is that there are these lipid nanoparticles which are carrying this mRNA, which is basically instructions. It's a blueprint to tell the cell how to produce a spike protein. So the lipid nanoparticle enters into the cell here, and then once it's entered in, it goes through this process inside the cell. It's super complicated. And what happens is that the cell grows a few horns, you know, spike proteins in this case. It's like, you know, the devil, you know, or Wolverine, you know, with the, well, you know what I'm talking about. Anyway, so this is what happens, right? The lipid nanoparticles come in, and the spike protein comes out, and the antibodies then figure out, it takes a couple of weeks or so for antibodies to come in and say, oh, we're going to fight this invader and we'll eliminate it from the body. So that's how it works. Now, there were a lot of problems that they kind of didn't anticipate in this vaccine, which makes it super dangerous. So the first one is that the mRNA, this stuff that gets into your cell, it actually goes everywhere in your body. So it goes into your brain, it goes into your lung, it goes into your heart. We all thought it was supposed to just stay in your shoulder and then just get eliminated through the lymphatic system and so forth. But it turns out because it's a gene therapy technology, these lipid nanoparticles are coated with this thing called polyethylene glycol, which allows them to go through all parts of your body. So it goes into your brain. It's like a free express pass into your brain. It also opens up the blood-brain barrier so that all sorts of crap can get in the meantime. So this is why people get migraine headaches when they get the vaccine, and they'll have that for hours before the blood-brain barrier closes up. But you know, this is what happens. The spike protein on the cells here that actually can break off and then just go freely circulating throughout the bloodstream. So that's another problem. So the mRNA essentially goes everywhere in your body. It's not just limited to your shoulder. The spike is toxic. It breaks out. You can't control the amount, distribution, and duration of spike in a given individual. Different people produce different amounts of spike. This is why most people who get the vaccine, they don't have any side effects at all, because they don't produce a lot of spike protein. They're just bad at following mRNA instructions. Other people are like super good at following instructions, and so they produce a lot of spike protein. And of course, that causes a lot of inflammation and blood clotting, which causes the strokes and the DVTs and the myocarditis and so forth. So huge range of neurological symptoms and huge range of cardiovascular symptoms caused by these, because of the blood clots and the inflammation caused by the spike protein, which people thought was harmless. In fact, if you go to the CDC website, they'll still think it's harmless. These non-human primate studies were never done, so we actually don't know the amount, distribution, and duration of spike in people's bodies. And this is why I've said in the past that the proper animal studies were never done. They did do animal studies, but they just didn't do the ones that are relevant that they should have done to characterize these vaccines. The pregnancy studies were never done before the CDC said, yes, it's safe for pregnant women. We did not have complete results on that when the CDC did that. They shouldn't have done that. You know, that was a no-no. Nobody spoke out about that. Nobody in the medical community said, hey, we don't have full data on pregnant women. Let's get the data first. Well, I shouldn't say nobody. Peter Doshi has been great about speaking out and saying, hey, you know, we need to hold back until we have the data. Peter Doshi has just been marvelous on this issue. There's the issue of original antigenic sin. Most people haven't heard of that. What it means is that it's a little bit complicated, but it effectively means that if you give the vaccine and you train your body on that vaccine, your body, when it gets infected by the virus, will know how to fight the spike protein epitopes that it was trained on, but it will have a harder time learning new tricks. So it's hard to teach an old dog new tricks. Well, once you're vaccinated and it teaches you how to attack the spike protein in the vaccine, it turns out it can also make it harder for you to then look at variants, because you've been trained so well on that, on these epitopes, on the antigen that is given to you. So, and then the seventh reason is, or the seventh problem is that there's the potential, and it's actually been proven. There's a recent paper from a group in Japan on this that was published in MedArchive that showed that there was vaccine-enhanced infectivity in these vaccines, which means the vaccine is actually helping the virus to invade your body rather than keeping it from invading. And so what's happening is the virus is mutating, and it's mutating in such a way that it evades the protection caused by the vaccine. It's kind of like, you know, you have a football team, right? And you got the blockers, and the virus is now mutated. So it figures out, oh, if I just go around this guy's right-hand side, I can get past him every time. And it turns out that they're also using that blocker to help them invade your cell. And so it's kind of like the vaccine then becomes, over time, it becomes completely useless. And even worse, it will help to have the virus infect you, which is like really super bad, right? Because not only is it going to kill more people than it saves, but now it's also going to make the people that it was given to potentially more likely to die, which is the exact opposite of what they intended. But, you know, you find these things out. They should have found this stuff out before, but they didn't do the right testing. They didn't do all of the testing that they should, because they rushed it to market because this is a pandemic, and they rushed it to market, so they didn't do the proper testing. They're doing the proper testing on us now, and so you pay the price. Okay, COVID math. I'm not going to go through this. I just want to, for those of you who are into math, the global average infection fatality rate is 0.15 per the paper done by John Ioannidis. Some people say that it's less than that now. That was at the time, and that's for the IFR at age 50 is like that same number. And the IFR moves two times for every 7 to 8 years. So if you have like 80 years of difference between the youngest and the oldest infected person, then you're looking at 1,000 times difference in terms of the infection fatality rate. Infection fatality rate means you got the COVID infection, and what's the chance that you're going to die if you get infected by COVID. So it doesn't talk about, you know, what's your chance of getting infected, so you have to add that on top of that. And so, you know, COVID will infect 20% to 30% of a population in a year, so take this number and then reduce it by, so it's only 20% of this number, which is smaller in terms of your chance, your absolute risk of dying. But what's interesting about this is that this 15%, if you take it down by, let's say, 20 to 30% of this number, you get a smaller number than the global average vaccine fatality rate, which means the vaccines are killing more people than they're saving. So, you know, it's another kind of interesting way to see that happening. And the other thing is that when you have these infections, what happens is that the percentage infected drops exponentially and decreases over time. So if 50% of the population gets infected this year, then there's only 50% to infect the next year, because natural infections, you're not going to get reinfected. Very rare, if ever, to see that. So 50% this year, so now you have only 50%. Now if you do 50% the next year, it's 50% of 50%, which is 25%, so forth. So you can see it declines. So it actually, the case for vaccination gets worse and worse over time as your chance of getting COVID reduces. So so right now, if you're 50 or under, vaccination makes absolutely no sense. And we're gonna show you some data that will show you that it's actually pretty bad even if you're elderly, and we'll go through that. So adverse event table. So what I did to compute this adverse event table, and you can see the entire table that I did by going to this URL. So this is just the tip of the iceberg here. This is not all of the adverse events. I'm just showing you that there are a lot of adverse events. And what I did is I looked at the number of adverse events this year, and I compared them with vaccines in the last 5 years and did an average. So the X factor is what is the rate of this particular adverse event versus the typical vaccine, which should be pretty much background. And the number one thing was pulmonary embolism, 473 times more likely to happen. There were, like, if there was one event in a typical year, there are now 473 events this year for this vaccine, which means this vaccine is really, really dangerous when pulmonary embolism and stroke and DVTs, thrombosis, D-dimer increasing, I mean, that increases in over 60%. Of people who get the vaccine, their D-dimer, which is an indicator of clotting. It happens, the blood clot dissolves, the D-dimer goes up, so D-dimer is kind of a lagging indicator that there was a clot, and you measure it like 3, 4, 5 days later after the vaccine, and you see that D-dimer is increased, which is a really bad sign. It says that everything that we've said, that these spike proteins are creating blood clots and so forth, is confirmed there. It's been confirmed by multiple physicians looking at the D-dimer. And of course, you can see this clearly in VAERS, that there's this cause and effect here, the 220 times. Cardiac arrest happens 75 times more often. And if when we examine the kids' data, the kids, 14 kids from, I think it was 12 to 17 died. They were analyzed by the CDC, the ACIP committee doing that. They found out that the most frequent cause of death that was listed, pulmonary embolism. What a coincidence. So, and they had five patients from cardiac arrest. These are kids getting heart attacks. They're not supposed to get it at that rate. But it's amazing, you know, like slow speech, the inability to talk happens at 52 times the normal rate. Okay, so these are all based on background rates, right? So it's not, these are not relative to each other. This is just relative to what the normal background rate is. So, you know, 52 times what the normal background rate is. But you see all of these things are getting elevated. Death is elevated. It's weird because it's a symptom in VAERS. It shouldn't be, but it is. You're not supposed to die from death. Okay, there are lots of troubling anecdotes that are all consistent with my high death rate argument, and it's not consistent with the CDC claims, because CDC says nobody has died from this. We haven't found any cause and effect here. So in Oahu, talked to Aubrey and Aguirre, and I've got a 1-hour interview with him. He's coming up next in the series. He's the number two in our false narrative series, and I'll be interviewing him and get the full story. He's been in this viral video that's been circulating. He's a healthcare worker in Hawaii, and he found that in his, from the cases that he knows, he knew of 32 people who died from the vaccine in an elderly, in a nursing home. 32 people died from the vaccine. And he said that there are actually true COVID deaths, there were zero that he's aware of, right? There are people who died and had a diagnosis of COVID, but they actually didn't die from COVID. They died from something else rather than, trouble breathing and the normal stuff that you would die from in a COVID death from. So he said he didn't see any. Maybe there's one or two or three, but you can see the extreme difference here. And this is supposed to be the group that's supposed to be the most protected. Place in Canada, and which we name in the, if you go actually into the documents that we refer to, we'll actually give you the name of that. I think it's like Sunnycrest Nursing Home in Canada. And there are 136 beds in Ontario. One of the workers there told us that after the vaccine, four people were dead and seven hospitalized. And we did the calculation for how many lives would be saved from COVID. It's about like one a year. So, you know, this is kind of another cost-benefit analysis. Was it worth putting killing four people and putting seven people in the hospital to maybe save one life from COVID? Ira Bernstein, physician in Canada, he's had 25 reportable events this year alone. And I asked him, how many reportable events did you have in the past? Like, is this, you know, more than normal? He said, well, I've been doing this for 29 years. I've never had a case where after a vaccine where I've needed to report it. Zero in 29 years. And he's a doctor, and so he knows what's going on. 25 events this year, zero in 29 years. I don't think it was just over-reporting and the more propensity to report in the VAERS system. These events are, you're seeing more events in VAERS because it's so much more dangerous. And you can confirm it when you actually talk to physicians who can see this in their own patients. And I know that you can talk to physicians who won't see any patients at all and say, no, there were no reportable events. But the thing is, they're not making the connection between, oh, you just got vaccinated and now you have this new thing. Like a lot of physicians will just say, oh, it was just coincidence. It couldn't have been related. And so it's quite easy to go to your favorite physician And they'll say, no, I didn't have any vaccine reportable events at all. But clearly there are a lot. And that's why VAERS, of course, it has so many reports, like, you know, I think it's somewhere around 600,000 or so. Neurologic events. So I talked to a neurologist. She has 20,000 patients. She's listed in U.S. News and World Report as a top neurologist, 20,000 patients. She's had 2,000 that she should fill a VAERS report on this year, and she's had zero in the last 11 years. Never had to report anything before vaccine related. This year, 2,000 events. So this is, she's got now 1,000 new patients, and she had essentially 1,000 of her existing patients, 20,000, 19,000 patients. And so you're looking at a 5% of her existing patients basically developed new severe neurological problems after the vaccine that she would like to report. But she got so frustrated at reporting in the VAERS system that she's only reported 2. So her underreporting rate number is not 41. For her, it's 1,000. And she's not alone, because everybody I talk to say, this VAERS reporting stuff, it crashes on you. It takes 30 minutes. You get 28 minutes into it, the thing crashes and you have to start over. And you basically say, look, I don't have the time for this. I did it for 2 patients and the other 2,000 will not get reported because I'm just not going to spend my time to do this. And that's why VAERS is so underreported. They found Charles Hoff, physician in Canada, was the first to report that when he measured the blood work in his patients, he found that over 60% of them had elevated D-dimers. Now, that means that that doesn't happen normally. That means that the vaccines are causing. This is causal. This is like, they're normal patients. They come in, they have elevated D-dimers, which means the vaccines are consistently shown to increase blood clots in 60% of the patients. And those D-dimers can be elevated for up to around 3 months after the vaccine injection. So these things are killing machines, and you can die. This means that you have like a 3-month window after you got the vaccine of kind of the, I may not be out of it, right? So if you get past 3 months, you're in better shape. So it's that three month sort of death window where most of the deaths will happen in the first few days after getting the vaccine. Another interesting observation pointed out by Peter McCullough is the troponin levels, which are troponin is something that you measure that tells you whether you have a cardiac risk. That some, like if when you have a heart attack and your heart muscle is damaged, it will increase your troponin levels. When you have myocarditis, it will increase your troponin levels. And so when you get a troponin level of 1 to 4 is a heart attack. And they were seeing troponin levels of 35 to 50, and it was lasting for 2 months after the vaccination. And usually you get a heart attack, your troponin level goes up and it goes back down, you know, like 5 days later. So when you're talking about troponin levels of 35 to 50 for 2 months, that is serious cardiac issues. I mean, this is way bigger than what you get from a heart attack. And there is no doubt that this stuff is happening because of these safe vaccines. Dr. Urso, it sounds like my neurologist. Zero VAERS reports in the past 28 years, and he's had 40 this year, and he's reported zero. Just didn't have time. Excuse me. So this data is not cherry-picked. I didn't go for these anecdotes that fit my narrative. These are anecdotes I'm able to get because people told them to me. And they're all consistent with our hypothesis, and none of them can be explained by the CDC-FDA hypothesis that says these vaccines are perfectly safe and this was just coincidental. Okay? Now, here's a paper. So this is published in the peer-reviewed literature. And again, if you get the presentation, you can go and click on this link and you'll see, because a lot of people say, oh, I don't believe unless it's in the peer-reviewed literature. Fine. Go look in the peer-reviewed literature, medical literature. What you'll find, here are two patients after vaccination, and look at this one. The normal level is 17 nanograms per liter for troponin, and this guy has a value of 10,453. That's like over 600 times normal. So a heart attack is like, you know, several times normal. 600 and over 600 times normal? That's a problem. You know, I mean, Peter McCullough, you know, showed me this and he said, like, this isn't mild myocarditis. These numbers here for the traditional test of 44, 27, 6. I mean, this, you know, 44 number, but this number is like, you know, just way off the charts. So these are just two patients that are reported on. And this stuff is not normal, folks. This is not mild. This is a train wreck in terms of the troponin levels, which are an indicator of heart damage. But CDC says it's safe and effective. I did a survey on Nextdoor because I wanted to have an unbiased, quick assessment just to see, just kind of like another sanity test. So I always like to do sanity tests just to make sure that I'm not making a mistake. So I did a survey on Nextdoor. And on Nextdoor, like, people don't like me because I say the vaccines are not safe. And I get hammered whenever I post on Nextdoor saying the vaccines are unsafe. Saying, oh, you're not a medical specialist, blah, 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 blah. So people don't like me. It's not like I'm serving my Twitter followers, right? Because those guys all like me because they follow me. So I'm going on a Nextdoor where people just don't like me at all. And I got like 136 people to respond to my poll. And so what's really, really interesting, you know, hey, you know, most 44% have no reactions. 40% had mild a day or less. 9% felt out of it for more than a day, but less than a week. Okay. 3% had to go to see a doctor after getting the vaccine. 3%. That's a lot. And 4% are still suffering. So if you do the math here, and you know, if this is representative, which, you know, it's not, it's I'm sure there are errors. This could be 3% or it could be 2%. I'm trying to get an order of magnitude just to, so this would be, you know, if we just multiply this out by the number of people who have been vaccinated, that would be 4 million doctor visits and 6 million people who are still suffering today. And what's interesting is that 4% is pretty close to that 5% that the neurologist had. Now the 5% is their existing patients, so they have some neurology problems already, so they may be more susceptible. So the 5% is probably an overestimate. But the point is that the 4%, you know, actually sounds kind of consistent. It's less than the 5% of the neurologist, and you know, it's in there. And so what's interesting is that CNN or any of the mainstream media, the New York Times doesn't run, they won't do a poll like this. In fact, when we went to polling agencies to try to get them to do a poll like this, they said, no, we won't do it. They claimed that, oh, I wouldn't have meaningful results and all this, but some polling firms would do it. And we did get, we showed you the earlier poll. So, you know, a lot of people turned us down. They would not do the poll. They didn't want to see the results. And of course, there's no CNN poll on this, right?